Good morning and welcome to our roundtable panel for this Monday, the 14th of July. Very nice to have you with us and hope you all had a pleasant weekend. And we are back to talk about issues of the day and we welcome your input. Roundtable.
Don't mind the construction work going on.
Wow.
It's fine. Turn the bandsaw off. We're doing a show.
Alan has made his entrance. Good morning.
So that's how it begins.
Yes, there you go. Good morning. Welcome again. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Let me introduce the panel to you this morning. WAMC's Alan Chartok joins us. Good morning, Alan.
Good morning, Joseph.
Newsman Ray Graff is here.
Morning.
And Libby Post, our political consultant, joins us as well. Good morning.
Hello.
Welcome to...
You can tell a lot just from the greeting.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. Hello.
Too much.
Yeah, that's why I always say good morning, Joseph, because in the old... I once told Joe a story about when my mother met somebody in the street she didn't like. She would say, how'd you do?
Oh, how'd you do? Yeah,
so
oh,
I would say, that. How'd you do to Joe? I said, that means you don't like me. So I can't say that anymore because I do like him.
I know you do. Yeah. It shows every day.
Yeah. Thank you all. Okay, so let's talk about what's going on in the world. Let's do what we're actually supposed to be doing here. Of course, the big story that has been brewing for several days is what has been happening in Gaza City. Several thousand Palestinians defying the urging of Hamas to remain in their homes fled areas in northern Gaza early Sunday after Israel warned them through flyers and phone calls of major attacks to come. Israel and Hamas seem to signal little public interest in international appeals for a ceasefire as they continue their barrages. More than 130 rockets were fired out of Gaza into Israel on Sunday, with 22 intercepted, the Israeli army said, while Palestinians expressed anger over the previous days. Israeli strikes on a center for people with disabilities and on a home in an attack that killed 17 members of one extended family. So it is, there is so much unrest and so much being talked about, both in our diplomacy and with our Secretary of State and with the Obama administration. And of course, as a world community watches what's going on, and I guess we'll begin with you, Alan, of what you make of this and where to start as far as comprehending what's happening.
Well, first of all, it's a horrible situation, and there really is no answer. There are always those people who will condemn one side or the other, but I don't see how the Israelis can allow somebody to start it and start firing rockets into their country and not respond. I just don't see that. On the other hand, there are many people who will take it one step out and will say, well, there has to be a different kind of philosophy on the Israelis, on a two-state solution, which the Israelis say that they are for. I don't know how this gets resolved. I know one thing, sooner or later, the Palestinians have got to say, okay, enough. We're not going to fire rockets into Israel. Libby, take it, Libby.
It's so distressing.
Oh, it's terrible. And
it's distressing, as you said, it's distressing on so many fronts. And, when you read the article that you referred to in the Times, when you read down, they keep talking about not the Israelis, but the Jews, the Jews, the Jews, the Jews. So it's like they're not making a distinction. And so between the Israeli government and Jews nationally or internationally. And so it just stokes the fire of anti-Semitism. We saw it happen this weekend. A synagogue in Paris was firebombed. There's definite, you can connect the dots between the rhetoric, the anti-Israeli rhetoric that really borders on anti-Semitism, and what happens to Jews around the world. Now, I'm not saying that what Israel is doing is right or wrong. I agree that, when one country is attacked, the other needs to be able to respond. Israel has much better defense mechanisms, but this the killing isn't going to stop, and the bombs coming from Palestine and the missiles aren't going to stop, so Israel has to defend itself. We need a new set of players. I mean, we need people who can take it out of us and them and redefine what us and them means, and try to, you know, and I know this is very pie in the sky, to be quite honest with you, because I don't think, given the present set of players in both countries, where Hamas and Hezbollah, part of their ethos is the destruction of Israel, you know, how can you sit down at a table with those folks and try to negotiate? Then you have on the other side Netanyahu and some of the other folks who take a very hard line perspective, and any encroachment is answered with rockets and bombs. Clearly, there's always going to be people who are going to lose their lives around this. And the media, you know, frames all this in a certain way. And it's a very unfortunate situation with no easy answers other than someone with a backbone and someone willing to stand up and say, enough, we're going to sit down, we're going to have a...
On which side?
I think it's got to be on both sides. There needs to be leadership on both sides who are willing to sit down and say, Israel has a right to exist, the Palestinians have a right to a state of their own, which Israel has never said no to. In 1948, that's what the UN accord was, that there would be a two-state solution with a economic union between the two, and the Arab countries said no, you know, and then move on and try to find a way. I think the United States has a role to play here, as does the international community, but it has to be a fair role.
There's another, you know, there's another issue here, and that is, what creates leaders?
No kidding.
You know, if you're in fact an Arab leader, you can't, you know, and you want to succeed, then the number one card in your deck is going to be the destruction of Israel.
Right.
And now I'm not talking about all Arab leaders, but I'm talking about some of the most destructive, and they will not. They understand that is what will get them ahead.
Right, and that's about people who want power instead of leadership. They want power and political power within their realm instead of exerting true leadership and saying, I will say, okay, I don't have to be the leader forever, you know, but let's try to find a way.
Let's work it out.
To work this out.
As in Northern Ireland.
Yes, yeah. You know,
where it took some real guts.
It did, and we've seen it in other places as well. And, you know, this whole region is such a tinderbox, and honestly, if Israel disappeared, you know, I think economically the region would just go into total chaos, because it's the strongest economy with a democracy.
As my professor John Stessinger put it, you know, the one thing that kept the Arab states from totally killing each other was the existence of Israel, sort of gave them this common enemy that they would deal with.
Right. But, you know, people shouldn't think that Israel isn't going to defend themselves. I mean, let's be real. And Bill Maher has a great quote that somebody sent me. There's just not another country in the world that would allow missiles to be rained down on them without fighting back. What I find so ironic that after World War II, everybody said, I don't understand the Jews. How could they have just gone to their slaughter like that? Okay, and then when they fight back, I don't understand the Jews. Why can't they just go to their slaughter? It's like, you know what? We did that once. It's not going to happen again. You're just going to have to get used to the fact that Jews now defend themselves, and by the way, defend themselves better. And, you know, it's from somebody from the left, which Bill Maher is, to make that statement, I think is pretty interesting. But what are we supposed to do? Not defend ourselves? That's the question. And I think the Palestinians will say the same thing. What are we supposed to do? Not defend ourselves. So if missiles are the only answer, then we need leaders to stand up.
It's not the only answer, because Hamas, as is well documented, has a great network of tunnels and booby traps. And so the question at this point is, does Netanyahu send in the ground troops because Hamas fires their rockets, and they fired hundreds of them. And sometimes in the press, you forget about this, that, you know, a lot of the press coverage focuses on what Israel is doing. But Hamas has been firing rocket after rocket after rocket. Now, they're often ineffectual, but they don't want them to be ineffectual. They want to kill, and they want to do damage.
Mm-hmm.
So the question is, are you going to fire these missiles? And by the way, Israel firing warning shots saying, you have to get out now. We're taking out this building. And I've seen footage of this. They'll fire a warning shot. They'll wait 90 seconds, and then they'll take out the building. They don't have to do that. They do that because they're concerned about civilian casualties. However, if you're going to really make a difference and get these rocket launchers out, and they're in civilian populations, they're in the middle of where people live, you may have to send in troops. And so this is the hard question that Netanyahu
They send in flyers. They say, we're going to bomb here. You should leave.
Well, let me put it this way. The Israelis are in a pickle because they have sent ground troops into Lebanon, other places before, right? And it has not exactly worked out because if you break it, you own it, and you got to stay there, and you know you never get out, and it's a quagmire. So you know,
it's already broken.
Well, right. Yes, but surgical strikes offer an advantage. But you're right, Ray. I mean, your point is well taken, which is that if in fact you're using civilians to surround the place where you're sending those missiles from. What do you expect?
Well, I know if Canada was sending missiles, rockets our way, we would be taking care of business. And so Israel's in the exact same spot. They have to do something. And I don't know if this is the right thing to do. Obviously, talking it out would be nice.
Well, you just wonder, you know, where's the rest of the global community? And not just the United States.
That was the next question.
But the rest of the global community. Where's England and France and the rest of Europe, even Germany to some extent? Where are these people? You know, they're just sitting back because they don't really care, you know?
Well, what can they do and what can we do?
Well, I think if there was...
to your point of sitting down and talking,
yeah, right. You know, if the economics is a very important part of this whole thing, and if there was economic incentives, if we started talking with Palestinian business leaders instead of these political leaders, with leaders of the West, I think we might be able to see something else happen and something else be brokered.
I doubt that those business leaders, no matter what they think, because I've certainly spoken with a lot of people who were Arab leaders or economic leaders when I met them and stuff. They don't seem nearly as vitriolic as the political leadership
right.
for exactly the reason I said before, because if you're not there, you're going to not be a political leader anymore.
Yeah. Right.
It's very tough.
Right.
Let's take a break. When we come back, we'll continue with other issues and check in on the mail as well. We welcome your letters, roundtable at WAMC.org, roundtable at WAMC.org. We'll be back right after this.
Support comes from Hampshire Veterinary Hospital, corner of University Drive and Route 9 in Amherst, Massachusetts. Doctors Katz and Purdy providing daily and on-call urgent veterinary care 24 hours every day, hampvet.com. Hanford Mills Museum, East Meredith, New York, presenting the exhibit Rural Genius, the story of three local inventors and rural ingenuity. 10 miles from Oneonta, hanfordmills.org. Scott Alarm Systems, licensed security and fire detection available with or without a phone landline, monitored by a 24/7 local central station. For commercial as well as weekend and full-time residential customers, scottalarmsystems.com. And Phoenicia International Festival of the Voice, 5 days of celebrating Spain with music from opera to baroque to flamenco, featuring Rossini's The Barber of Seville, July 30th to August 3rd, PhoeniciaVoiceFest.com.
We'll be right back.
Good morning and welcome back to the roundtable and to our discussion this morning. We just have a few minutes and then we'll go over to the news and find out the latest all across the world and talk about and then come back and talk about many of the issues that we still have to discuss. Let us talk about, again, we always welcome your letters, roundtable@wamc.org. We will now go to another part of the world, which is still having trouble as well, as Iraq's deadlocked parliament was again unable to reach a deal to name a new speaker on Sunday. Sunni militants carried out a raid near Baghdad, a symbolically significant attack, signaling their intent to move closer, even if only by a few miles, toward the Iraqi capital, although the pretext for the delay was a severe sandstorm that prevented northern Iraq's Kurdish lawmakers from flying to Baghdad. The real reason appeared to be that last-minute deals between the largest Shiite bloc and the Sunnis were falling apart. So in the few minutes that we have, Libby, what do you make of that?
I think it's one of these situations that's, you know, is going to end up being just devolve into violence, and whoever stands on top of the rubble is going to be the victor. You know, I don't see these people sitting down either and trying to come up with a good way of handling it. This is sectarian religious violence, and it's the Crusades within Iraq, but within Islam, but these two sections and sects, and it's not going to be an easy.
And we now
fix.
See the Kurds saying, okay, there's no way out right. except for us to start our own thing.
Right.
And to keep our own thing, of
right.
course, which is going to make the Turks crazy.
And, yeah.
and that's where yeah. that's where it all happens.
Yeah. But whoever has the gun on the top of the pile is the one who's going to win in the long run.
Well, it's so interesting because the more that I see of this, the more it looks to me like, you know, the Shia, while they have the numbers, certainly don't have the power.
No.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so you have many of these societies in which this is, I think, going to go on forever. I don't think it's, as you say,
and it could take the rest of the Middle East, the other Arab countries with it.
By the way, there are some people who have responded, Joe, to our, what we have said here. Our opinions are pretty clear on this.
We're out of time, though, right?
Oh, we are?
We have about 45 seconds.
So Tom says, why didn't Israel respond to the kidnapping with police action targeting those particular criminals? Instead, the use of collective punishment draws a predictable result of rocket fire followed by Palestinian and civilian casualties. Israel has every incentive to mow the grass of Palestinian institutions and continue to seize land, and no incentives to seek a political solution. But as you say, Joe, we don't have a lot of time to answer what I consider to be a different opinion than ours, but we want to read them. Who among you will give voice to what Jimmy Carter called the apartheid policies of Israel, the broken treaties, the Palestinian land stolen by Israel, and the illegal Israeli developments on Palestinian lands? He says, Liam, this is not anti-Semitism, but it does take a critical look at militant Zionism. There are those who would disagree with that.
Let's take a break there. And we'll do some letters on our way back
on the flip side.
On the flip side. Thank you, Ray. We're going to take a break. We do welcome your letters, roundtable@wamc.org, roundtable@wamc.org. We welcome your comments, roundtable@wamc.org. During our break, many of you listened to NPR News, and many of you took the moment to write us letters. A lot of you took a time to write us letters, so we will go to that right now. And Alan, you're keeping track of them all.
I am, and it just proves that no matter what we personally may think, the panelists here, we always read the other letters. Dear Roundtable, Israeli politics was hijacked decades ago by the hard right when a peacemaker was elected, Rabin. He was assassinated by guess who? The hard right, who maintained their grip on power by building settlements, which causes Palestinians to elect Hamas, and round it goes. That's from Paul. Says Matt, Joe, I was disappointed by the one-sided discussion held today on the Israel-Palestinian conflict. I recall a quote from a previous Israeli prime minister in regard to the Palestinian attacks. We don't hate you because you kill our children. We hate you because you make us kill yours. But what about Israel as an occupying force and the relentless growth of settlements? Any claim that God had given them the right to lands is rubbish and should be recognized by thinking people. Libby is right. We need a new set of leaders on all sides, and that's from Matt. And then And here is Aliza, who says, nobody is saying that Israel should not defend itself. You have to look to the root cause. So why people are firing missiles and building tunnels? Palestinians have nothing to lose. Israel continues to build settlements in their territory. It's a huge population of Palestinian young people who only know Israel for their oppressive policies. What the American media doesn't report is the horrible conditions these people live in. An oppressed population will risk anything for their freedom. And I can't read more because we're trying to keep these short. And Eric says, I was thinking that the view from the balcony would be best for the U.S. and others of the world community. This allows us to look deeper and consider whether the policies and practices of each group, are they equally damaging to the Israelis? Extra settlements and government practices cause as much damage to human life as the stones and the ineffectual rockets hurled by Palestinians. I'm on the side of peace. Thanks, Malcolm. And then Sarah, I've heard little, if anything, on your program about the millions of Palestinians held under subjugation with defenses, checkpoints, while their land is being taken away from them, and they watch Israel's settlements continue to be built. And then Alice says, "Dear, too long a letter, but I'll read some of it. Dear Roundtable members, I was most interested in how you would handle this complicated subject. I was disappointed but not surprised. The issue is really not what the country has, that a country has to fight back. Yes, a country in many cases feels it has to fight back if attacked or treated wrongly. And I agree that a lack of real leadership is key here. The extremists on both sides do not want a solution. But the terrible treatment of the Palestinians by the Israeli government was never brought up until the Israeli government respects the international laws and stops and pulls out the illegal, in capital letters, settlements. There will never be peace." Okay, so then I don't know. Joe, can you help me here? Because I don't know what we've got. Well, we got Jeffrey, who says, "I am shocked and disgusted by your complete failure to acknowledge the scale and horror and proportion and one-sidedness of Israel attacks this week on Gaza and the resultant devastation, human suffering of an entire population." I'm not going to answer. I'm just not going to answer. We had our shot already. Okay. Paul, I did already. Okay, so I think that's it. How about
Did you get the one? We have one from Sean.
Sean.
That should be top of the pile there.
Sean, here's a new one. Yeah, quite right. Sean says, the hypothetical comparison was made this morning, but saying the United States would certainly retaliate in a similar fashion to Israel bombing Palestine should Canada launch missiles against us is completely invalid and misleading. The United States is not building settlements in Fort Erie, Ontario, or up in the Yukon Territory. The United States has not occupied Canada as recently as 9 years ago. The United States does not regulate the flow of people and goods across the Canadian border. I don't agree with the Palestinians sending missiles into Israel, but just a little more balance on this morning's conversation would be appreciated. Hey, we're reading every single letter here. If you take difference, you let us know. I don't think you can fault us on that. How about a Palestinian on the faculty at SUNY Albany sitting around the table with you folks next time? I guess that's it. Do you see anything else?
Did you do the one, and I apologize if I didn't hear you read it, Anthony on the about the Mexican drugs?
Anthony. I'm looking for Anthony.
Says, I've heard several comparisons about Canada missiles. What about Mexican drugs and violence spillover, the consequences and lives and law enforcement are easily worth an effort equal to theoretical missiles?
All right.
And I think that is it.
Okay.
And if we missed your letter, send it again.
No, I think it's clear.
I think we've tried to get everyone here.
Sure.
So we're going to move on to other issues. But again, we would love to hear what you have to say. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Okay, moving on to other things. We will talk about the border crisis and the politics of it. We've been talking a lot about the subject over the past several weeks, and we'll continue to do so. There was an item in the Washington Post over the weekend that said, until now, the politics of immigration have been seen as a no-lose proposition for President Obama and the Democrats. If they could get a comprehensive overhaul passed, they would win, and if Republicans blocked it, the GOP would further alienate crucial Hispanic and moderate voters. Again, something that we've discussed many, many times. But as this article goes on to say, with the current crisis on the southwest border, where authorities have apprehended tens of thousands of unaccompanied Central American children since October, that calculus may be shifting. Republicans and even some Democrats have accused President Obama of being insufficiently engaged in a calamity that many say he should have seen coming.
Well, as we have said on this very panel before, this is the law of unanticipated consequences. The fact is that we have treated people when they came with a decent way of doing it. And what happens is that when there's somebody on the other side, they say, if kids can go over, you know, uninstructed and have a chance, then it's okay. And we're going to send our kids because it's better over there than it is where we are in these Central American, in some of these Central American places. So they do that. I think it's like handball. Somebody throws the ball against the wall and the president has to answer it. So you should have seen it coming doesn't do it for me.
Libby?
You know, I think the what we're hearing, and we've heard this before, is his sense of aloofness from some of these hands-on people type issues. Not that I think it's right, but it's a frame that the Republicans have used as an underpinning of criticism, and this is one of those things.
Well, when you got nothing to work with,
you got to go after people,
and you say, okay, well, I don't like his style, or I don't like his voice, or I don't like this or that,
because they don't have much else to do. You know, I think that we need to do something. Clearly, we need to do something about what's going on at the border, but it has to be humane, and we do need this money. We need the money so that we can have these people live in better than not that it's deplorable, but better living conditions that they have now, and really take a hard look at our immigration. I think it's all about fear of the other. And we were all immigrants. Let's be real. The only people who aren't immigrants in this country are the Native Americans. But we're all immigrants.
And even they
here.
Came by land bridge.
Yeah, they came somehow. And we're all immigrants. And to say, you know, we can't allow these people in, this is our country, they're taking away our jobs, it's just, you know, your typical right-wing hysteria that needs to stop. You know, we were immigrants. I'm second generation.
Yes, but are you criticizing Obama for saying to the Republicans in the House, give me $4 billion and I will stop it? And I think he's got them on the defensive. They say, yeah, well, we're not against that, but we think he'll spend the money
right,
in the wrong,
wrong
way.
Right, because and they bring out the health care rollout and some other things that have not gone as well. But when you look at other administrations, they've screwed things up, too.
Well, I don't know that we can accept that the health care thing is screwed up. I mean, I think more and more evidence is that people are appreciating what they got.
I get that. But I think it was the website rollout.
Yeah, sure.
I think, you know, and they're talking about the VA stuff. The VA stuff has been going on for years, and there was just a story that I saw that broke that now there's some implications here at the VA in Albany, but this stuff has been going on for years.
But it is on, as
it's
I said before,
his watch.
On his watch.
That's right.
So
he's doing something about it. Yeah. And he's trying to do something about this, and he's trying to do something about all the other problems that we're facing in this country, and the Republicans won't give him an inch, because if they do, they'll give the presidency to another Democrat.
Which they will anyway.
Republicans, I think, sure, let's take it as you have written it, that they'll always have an issue with anything he does. Let's take it that way. But they're saying, oh, you want $4 billion to fix the problem that essentially you, the president, caused when you issued the executive order saying that, you know, if some of the youngsters meet certain requirements, they will be allowed to stay and work. So you sent this, the Republicans say, you sent the signal that started this flood, and now you want to spend $4 billion to fix your own mistake. And I think that's the heart of their indignation.
So you think it's done on the merits, Raymond, as opposed
to... I'm not saying whether it's meritorious or not. That's their argument.
Well, yeah, but what's making them make the argument is the question I have for you.
The fact that in June of 2012,
The
president made an executive order because he said, Republicans in Congress, they don't want to play ball on immigration. I'm going to do
this executive order.
So let me ask you a question. How come when the Democrats are yelling, put the president's proposals, which you're citing, up to a vote?
Well, I'm citing an executive order.
Excuse me.
Yeah, the Republicans refused to vote on immigration reform.
That's exactly why he said he did it.
Well,
yes.
So how come, if that's the case, Boehner, I want to be careful about the pronunciation because I made a mistake the other
day. As opposed to Friday, yes.
Yes, well, I think it's the other way, but that's okay.
That the Republicans would, in marginal districts with lots of Hispanics in them, for example, would want to vote on that immigration reform? They do not. And that is as undemocratic as could be, a small d. And let me tell you, Ray, we have watched the Republicans yelling every time they have an issue where the president will go along and say, up or down, up or down. Now we have up or down. How come the Speaker of the House, in the most undemocratic fashion, will not allow this to happen?
I am not here to defend Boehner or any of the Republicans.
Well, sounded that way to me.
No, I'm just telling you what I believe, where the indignation, from where it stems point.
No, what you're telling us is that there's an I think, Raymond, I don't want to get inside.
Please don't.
No, okay. But that there's an intellectual argument which is made out of the politics of the situation. You don't understand what I'm saying? In other words, they don't like the president. They want to get him. And whatever intellectual rationale they can come up with. But how come they won't let the bill up for a vote?
But wait a minute. Yeah. In this instance, the $4 billion or $3.6 billion is to stem this tide, which, if you are to believe Republicans, is a direct result of the president in June of 2012 issuing this executive order, which gets back to their argument that this is...
Joined by a lot of Republicans in the United States Senate, by the way.
Well, not an executive order.
No.
Executive order is an executive order. And I think that's part of the argument that this is an imperial presidency and he rules by fiat and he made a mistake. And he even would say, he was not going to say it, but he would probably in a candid moment say, well, this was the wrong signal to send and now I have to fix the problem.
No, if he had gotten his bill passed, there would not have been this reaction.
Not arguing with you on that.
So therefore... You know, he asked for a bill. The Republicans wouldn't let it happen. There would have been a reform. There are 12 million undocumented people in this country, 12 million people. And the problem might have gone a long way to being solved. Instead, they stood in the way. They said, we're not going to allow this to happen. And then you're saying, okay, under those circumstances, since there is no path to citizenship, that's, you know, I mean, to me, this invalidates your argument.
My argument, I'm only stating the Republicans' argument. I'm not arguing with you. I'm not sure that you addressed their argument, but that's fine. In other words, apples and oranges here. We're dealing with a situation on the ground where there are tens of thousands of youngsters basically coming in. So the president has to do something.
Which he should do, and which he's trying to do.
With that, we'll take a break, and we'll be back. We welcome your letters, roundtable at wamc.org.
Support comes from Allardyce Ace Building Supply, providing lumber and building supplies for commercial and home needs with locations in Malta, Saratoga Springs, and Milton, New York. Allardyce.com. University of New Hampshire, offering an online Master of Social Work program, mswonline.unh.edu. Ward's Nursery and Garden Center, Great Barrington, for summer, winter garden flowers, long-blooming perennials or annuals, patio containers, tools, garden furniture, and pest solutions, wardsnursery.com. And Hyde Hall, presenting The Haunting of Hyde Hall, featuring staged ghost stories in the 1830s country manor overlooking Otsego Lake, hydehall.org.
Welcome back to the Roundtable panel. I'm Joe Donahue, along with Libby Post, Ray Graff, and Alan Chartok, and it is very nice to have you with us. If you have a hollow feeling, if you feel bereft in some way, I know it's because the World Cup is over.
Oh!
Oh, God.
112 minutes in, they scored a goal.
Is that
good times?
Yeah, it was, that was the end.
It was sort of anticlimactic. I didn't watch it, but just the idea that they won after a regular play on a
extra
penalty
time.
Kick or whatever.
Well, it was sort of the same with the U.S. match, right? I mean, it was, you play the whole game and then it comes, right? Yeah. So it's all over.
Yeah, oh well.
And the German folks over there are celebrating, and making a great to-do about that one lucky kick. Germany is now, as you know, one of the great powers in this world. Created an economic, it's at the top of the economic heap. It's one of the great exporters in the world. And that gives some of us the shivers. Because the single worst thing that has ever happened in my lifetime happened there.
I understand.
And it's just, I just can't help it.
Yeah, I understand. It's a purely emotional reaction, one with some validity. And I get it. I really do get it.
Ray, you look perplexed.
No, I mean, there's no reclamation and
you know,
countries can't change.
Well,
and
as you
be
may
better.
Remember, well, there were two things.
It's been a long
World
time.
World War I and World War II. And while we don't subscribe to the theory of national character, which was greatly debated in college when I was there, you know, Could this happen again? There were people at the end of the Second World War, like Secretary of the Treasury Morgenthau and others, who literally wanted to level Germany and make it into a pasture because of, you know, what he saw as the inability to not do it again. And it is true. I was in Germany. I met lots of young Germans who really are terribly ashamed of the past of the country and who wanted to be different. On the other hand, look at what's going on back and forth between us and Germany and the kicking out of our State Department people and our ambassadors and their relationship with Putin. And we know that his instincts are not all that democratic. It's something that I believe we really have to watch very carefully.
It's, you know, when you talk about, we talked about Israel at the beginning, at the top of the show. Now we're talking about Germany. And, you know, Israel is a direct, is the creation of what happened in Germany in the Holocaust. And nobody wanted to take the Jews. There were boats and then nobody would take them in. And, you know, our country was just as guilty of that as any other. And it's something that stays with you when it's impacted you personally. And I lost the majority of my family in the Holocaust. You know, my grandfather was one of 17, and three of them made it out. And I'm, as I said before, I'm a second generation Jew here, and it's the third and fourth generation that don't have that kind of connection. And not that I want to be the, oh, never forget, you know, constantly being... Yeah. Hammering that home, but we can't ever forget, because look what happened this weekend in France. A synagogue was firebombed as a result of the anti-Jewish, anti-Semitic messaging around what's going on in Israel. And all you need to do is connect the dots. And I'm sure someone's going to write in about our Semitocentric perspective.
I don't know where to go from here now.
Well, it started with soccer.
Yeah.
Well, right. I was going to say, they won a game.
Yeah, they won
a game, and so a couple of minutes they get one thing, the country goes crazy because, you know, they win. And if it had been Argentina, it would have been the same thing.
Right, absolutely.
You know? And there are some things they have in common, you know, in terms of their soccer, their love of soccer.
Yes.
But, you know, it's. I think that the whole complications around how soccer is refereed and the minutes and all that works is part of the problem why some of us can't wrap our heads around it.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, you know, 9 innings in baseball, you got two halves in football.
Lots of time for commercials.
Yeah, right. You know, it's just, it's weird. It's just, I can't figure it out.
It seems to me that there was a consensus, an international consensus, that this was the year that they were going to make, that they were going to make soccer into something that had not been before.
Keith Olbermann had the greatest line, which is, soccer is the our game of the future, and it always will be.
Very witty, very witty.
You know, and I'm glad for those people who like to watch it. We sat in a bar in D.C. a few years ago and watched the women's final with USA was in it. It was very exciting.
We're out of time. Thank you very much for being a part of the program. We welcome your letters, roundtable at WAMC.org.
And they'll be posted, won't they, Joe, if people write in to us?
Well, there'll be
comments on the website.
Oh, yes. I thought you said we'll be posted. I'm sorry. Oh, yes.
We'll be posted.
They will be posted, yes. Again, WAMC.org. You're listening to the roundtable on WAMC.